Welcome to Publishing Cousins, where family meets the fascinating world of books. I'm Melissa Lesher, the author.
And I'm Nikki Becker, the illustrator.
We are partners in publishing.
Ever wonder what really happens behind the scenes in publishing? Well, you're in the right place. Every episode, we'll be pulling back the curtain on this wild and wonderful industry, sharing our own creative adventures, and dishing out hard-earned wisdom about writing and illustrating for publication.
From manuscript mayhem to deadline drama, from sketch submissions to final flourishes, we're bringing you the real deal, served with the hefty side of cousin banter and plenty of laughs. Whether you're dreaming of seeing your own work in print or you're just a book lover curious about how the magic happens, we've got something special for you.
So grab your favorite beverage, settle into your comfy chair, and join us for an insider's journey through the world of publishing. We're the Publishing Cousins, and we can't wait to share our stories with you.
All right, Nikki, so excited to start the Publishing Cousins podcast with you today. So I wanted to start off by just sharing how the two of us got into the world of publishing. Mine's a fluke. I didn't actually ever intend to get into publishing or writing, but I had this story idea and I started writing it and then reading it to my kids at school and they loved it. And I thought, hey, maybe I've got a thing for this. This is after going through college and I had to do a course where you had to write a story. And my professor gave me like an A++ and was like, you need to write. And I was like, nah, I'm going to teach. I'm not writing. So, and then of course, after teaching for a little while, I really enjoyed writing stories for my class. So that's kind of where I got into being an author. And then I found out I don't really care to write kids' stories as much as I like adults' novels. So, and romance, but Christian romance. So that's kind of how I fell into the world of publishing. And I have more to share on that, but I'm going to stop and let you go, Nikki.
So you wrote a children's story first. Because I thought the story about your grandparents was the first.
No, when I was in college, so we were given an assignment where you picked a picture and you had to write a story around that picture. And you had to do it to where you gave instructions for the illustrator too. So you had to say, is this a 2-page spread? Where's the text going to go? You know, it's totally up your alley, Nikki. I still have it. I could pull it out and we could probably work on it together at some point.
Yes.
That was the first official story I wrote.
Huh. Why did that? See, I learned something new. I didn't know about that one. So what was your object?
Oh, there is this book out there, and I will have to go back and look it up. I can't remember the name of it, but it has like 26 random pictures, and then it will have like, it has a little story starter under the pictures, and then you take it from there. And so mine was, it was like a railroad track heading over water, and in the distance was a mountain, and you could see like the outline of a castle on top of the mountain. And so it was about this orphaned kid that in the 1800s that they discover this magical land and discover he's actually from that magical land. And that's kind of where it went.
Huh. Well, that's kind of cool.
You know, the kids loved it.
this is where we are going to stray completely off topic, but I'm going to go there. Years ago when I was working in library land, I was asked to teach the librarians kind of an illustration, just do like a little seminar or workshop. And so what I wanted to do was explain some of the things that, you know, when they're doing a story time, you know, how that visual literacy is coming through. Yeah, you're reading the words as a librarian, but think about what the kids are looking at when you've got that book face out, you know, and think about that when you choose those books for story times. You can't really figure out visual literacy, in my opinion, sometimes unless you have to think about it when you draw an image. So we talked a little bit about the visual literacy side of it. And then I had went through, there was a game, an old Crayola game. And there were cards in the game, and it would be a bunch of nouns, a bunch of adjectives, and a bunch of verbs. And so you had to pick one of each and then kind of formulate a picture. So I went through that game and wrote just one sentences with those three words, but filled it into a whole sentence. But I cut them out, and everybody got a piece of paper, a pencil, some kind of art supply, you know, crayons, colored pencils, you know, just really easy. And then everybody got a sentence. And that was their object, after kind of learning a little bit about visual literacy, was that they had to sit and complete this illustration, but think about what I just talked to you about visual literacy. Think about, you're not putting the words on the page. You know the words as the illustrator, but you're not going to put the words on the page. So you want to make sure that the kid gets what that sentence said to you as the illustrator, and that they're going to read it via your picture. And it was a lot of fun. And I have forgotten all about that little workshop until just now, because it sounds a lot, that sounds similar, but you actually had a visual to start mm-hmm. versus, you know, words on a page. So
yeah, it sounds like a fun writing. Well, for you, it'd be illustrating activity. So was, when your time in library land, was that your first step into illustrating, or did you start before that?
Okay, so my story starts back when I was a very young child with coloring books and crayons. That was the toy that I wanted. You know, I had a younger sister, and she was always into, you know, dolls, you know, playing house and Barbies and that stuff. And I guess gravitated towards coloring book and crayons. And mom always said, you know, keeping crayons in the house, that appeased me, because once they lost a point, I wanted new crayons. You know, they could still be the crayon, but once that tip was worn, you know, no, I needed new ones. But, and then I used to draw in the covers or on the sides of the pages, you know, in the white space, I don't know, my parents always would doodle with me, because I was, you know, I would draw, you'd flip placemats over in a restaurant. We used to have paper. You don't see that a lot anymore, but you used to see paper placemats in restaurants. Or if you brought in children, if your family brought in children, a lot of restaurants kept crayons and the activity placemats, and, you know, that kept them busy while you were, you know, having a meal. But I would draw on that or do the coloring on that or whatever. And it landslide into, once you get into school, you have a lot of art, you do a lot of art and craft projects, you know, and you do the first couple of years you're in school. And then I was just blessed from elementary school on to have amazing art teachers that saw that there was something in me that was, you know, that I was passionate about. I went through the gifted and talented program when I was young. I didn't get accepted my first year. You had to draw a shoe, and I didn't put enough imagination in my shoe because they told me to draw my shoe, and I took my shoe off and drew my shoe. So, but after that, you know, you kind of learn what you did wrong, and then you do it the next time. But that went into, well, like I said, I always had really good teachers. I had a fifth grade teacher that, man, I would love to find him again. And I've tried, but nobody seems to know what happened to him after he retired. And anyway, he started to see things. And I probably should have, I'd have to find where it is, but I have it somewhere. And I found it not too long ago, and I based an illustration off of it recently. And, you know, you get assignments. I think this was fifth grade. So you get assignments, and I think we were doing some kind of research where, you know, you're learning to use the encyclopedia. And so I had to write up a report, a book report, nonfiction book report about macaws, you know, the parrot. And so I went and said, well, can I draw mine? Well, yeah, I want you to still write your facts, and you're learning to cite your resource and things like that. But he allowed me to draw part of my assignment. And that led into me getting to draw and do things for the bulletin boards in the classroom and stuff like that. And I went on. So when I went into middle school, I had an art teacher that was really just challenged me a little more than the other kids in my class. And then when I went to high school, I think I was the first kid ever in the history of the school to take art past art two. So I was like the only person ever at that time to take art one, art two, art three, art four every year of high school. And so I think my junior and senior year, my art teacher just said, do whatever you want. I don't even have a syllabus for you. And then there's not a class, like an actual, like this period is art three. So I got put in first period. And then I would just come in, hang out with her, whatever that class was, they did their thing and I did whatever I wanted. And I knew probably from that time that I was going to go to art school. So I was able to know, you know, to get into art school, here's a list of art I need to do. And I have 2 years to do it. So I did that, which meant I got accepted easily. I went to art school. I went to art school, though, to do time-based media, which would be animation. But Disney comes in and says, well, at this time, and says, we're going to switch our whole animation over to CGI and computer. We're not going to do hand-drawn stuff. And at that time, that was really disheartening to me because it was like, man, I love that sketchy part of the film. You know, Robin Hood is one of my favorites. I love that you still see sketch marks within that whole film. It's wonderful. And so that kind of was like, yeah, man, that's not the route I want to go. So again, I was lucky enough to have some really good educators that after your first year, you're all doing the same thing. So if you were going to go be an industrial designer and design funky chairs all your life, you're doing the same thing that I was doing as an illustration major or a fashion designer or, you know, whatever you were doing. We all had that fundamental year. And so at the end, they take all of your work into a room, and for several hours, three random teachers who you've not had before look over your work. And then after they have a good chance to look at it and talk about it, then they sit down with you and they say, here's what we advise you to do. And so they could see that I knew proportion. I could draw the body. I could, you know, I could do all these things and I could turn it around and around and around and I could draw it consistently. So they said, you really need to be an illustration major. You need to forget about time-based media and you need to do this. This is where your longevity is going to be. So that's what I listened and that's what I did. And then went from there. Now, library land comes into play. After you graduate college, you have to have a job. We were always kind of told, give it 7 years. Give it 7 years to really really hone your skill. Give it 7 years to build that perfect portfolio. Give it 7 years for your name to get out there, because you got to think, this is pre-Facebook, this is pre-Instagram. You know, you're building a body of physical work that is going to go in a binder type of portfolio. You're going to print that binder however many times to submit to however many publishers, and you're going to mail that beast out. So, you know, it takes time to A, build the funds to do that, make the mailing list to perfect that portfolio. Though that was around the time that Blogger was starting to be big. And so I kind of decided I'd had some odd jobs, like I worked at Michael's Arts and Crafts, Hobby Lobby. I worked at a car dealership because I thought, if I can sell a car, I can sell me as an artist. Right. I always had a reason why I did a job. So after that, I kind of decided, okay, now what? Because I'm kind of growing away from those things. I need something a little bit more geared strictly towards books. Okay, yeah, I could go to Barnes and Nobles, but I didn't live near one. And I was looking through the classifieds in the Sunday paper, okay, because that was still a thing at this point. And there was a job for a youth service specialist for a major library system on the east side of Cincinnati. Well, I told myself, well, what better way to constantly be in the know and the trends of what's going on in publishing than to work in a library. You're surrounded by books every day. So that's what I did. I applied and I got it and I moved. It was a 3-hour move back to Cincinnati and took that job. Did that for a while. And then I ended up in another library system in the graphic design department and did that until I built up enough of, I built up a portfolio. I did a couple of books and then got an agent. And when I got an agent, she landed me a full-time gig and I said goodbye to libraries and went off and did illustration full-time. So,
And am I right that most of the books sitting behind you on the shelf you've illustrated?
Not most. The top and then the first row across is okay. Mine. I'm somewhere between 75 and 100 published pieces.
Neat. That's awesome. I couldn't remember how many you have. I am just going to point out Pete laying back there behind you. So those of you who are watching the video version of this podcast, you will probably always see Pete back there sleeping. Most sleeping. Of the time sleeping, right?
That's her couch. It's no longer mine. It's hers.
It's all hers. Yeah, I love it. So I was going to say, though, behind me, I'm going to tilt my camera just a little bit. I don't know. Can you see that? If it's not wanting to turn. There it goes. Do you see my
your poster?
Big poster, yeah. Back here? Mm-hmm. So that's the book you were referencing that I dedicated to my grandparents. So my that's the first book I published. And I fell flat on my face with that book, which was such a great learning experience. There's a couple things behind it. One, I was naive to the publishing world. And I just thought, I'll write a book, I'll get it published, everybody will want to read it and buy it. And I don't really have to do anything to, you know, like get it out there. Well, that's not true. I learned the right way or the hard way on that, but I also rushed it. I was writing that while my grandpa was fighting cancer. And mm-hmm. When I went and told him, hey, grandpa, I'm going to publish this book, he was so overjoyed, like he cried. And if you knew my grandpa, which I know you knew him, that was not normal. That was not typical for him to get emotional. Of course, towards the end there, he was pretty emotional, but he talked about how his mom wrote articles for magazines and was published. And that, yes, Bammy did. Yeah, I know you're looking at me like, what? I didn't know that till I had this conversation with him. It's in some of those like family magazines. She had stuff published in that. And then Grandpa had some things published in a book, some letters and articles that he wrote. Yeah. So he gave me that. So I have that. And so he was just so thrilled that the next generation had a writer. Yeah. In it, you know, so I was pushing so hard to get it done. So I didn't give it everything that it deserved to be outstanding. Because I was trying to rush it. So I've learned not to. I still didn't make it before he passed, which kind of broke my heart. But it is what it is. I think one day I'll probably revamp it. But that's also a young adult book. And I'm not writing young adults anymore.
You start somewhere. I mean, you do. My first book, I actually pulled it out not too long ago and went, oh my goodness, this is awful. Like, this is awful, awful. And, you know, my first book was cut paper. Like, first of all, you know, if you do cut paper, it's fun. It is so much fun and so much fun building it. And I had a lot of fun with that book. I do say, but you run into a whole new challenge of photographing that. And then you've got to find somebody who knows how to photograph illustration work. So that the shadows aren't there. And then, you know, and I know we have all kinds of technology now that it's just easy to take that out. But I didn't in 2006 and 7 when I worked on that book. And it was hard. It was it was something that, yeah, I will never do that again. And it's awful. But it would be fun to go back and redo some of that stuff. If not, for anything but a portfolio piece to say, look, before and after, like, This is 20 years ago. Like, look at the difference.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, like, kids at school read it. I think they just love it because they know me, right? Yeah. They're like, oh, this is Mrs. Lesher's book. But, and I'm like, yeah, y'all probably really, it's not that great, you know? And they'll come back, and kids are easy to impress. They think it's amazing, and they keep asking, when are you going to write the next one? And I'm like, sorry, guys, I quit writing for you. Writing for adults now.
You have to wait till you're 18.
That's right. That's right. So the funny thing is, the book that you've been doing the cover design for me on, that's coming out, or might be out already by the time this hits the air, but I have several high school girls ready to read it. So that's good. I'm at least hooking them with some good romance novels. But anyways, I digress. It is funny, though, that your first piece, you're like, ugh, not really impressed. My first one, I'm the same way.
I'm pretty sure everybody out there that does what we do is going to say, oh, no, like, we've evolved. We are so much better than we were now. And we're going to say the same thing 10 years from now from where we are right now. Both crafts are... you are in a constant state of evolution. And if you're not, you're doing something wrong. You should be always striving to better yourself in whatever area it is. For an illustrator, there could be several things. I'm not quite sure about a writer, because I'm the worst writer in the world. But, you know, you might want to put more, you want to learn lighting. You know, a couple of years ago, my big thing was I want to be better at drawing foliage. I mean, who says that? I want to be better at drawing leaves on the bush or grass or whatever it is. You're constantly evolving. You should be constantly evolving.
It's the same for a writer. We're looking at how well are elements of the craft, right? I'm constantly looking at how can I improve my dialogue? How can I improve the use of body beats and movements and description and just the plot and getting to the climax and getting to the resolution, all of that, story structure. How do you're just constantly improving on those pieces, which is what makes me so excited about our podcast, because I love that we're bringing the illustrator and the author together, and we get to share these experiences. So people are going to get to learn from our own mistakes and hopefully grow and get connected to some great resources. As they start their journey, or as they may already be mid-journey, but hopefully they find some good nuggets from us.
Or just make fun of us and say, what is she talking about?
Hey, that's okay, because it's supposed to be fun too.
No, I had somebody recently tell me I was a veteran in illustration, and I went, are you kidding me? I still feel like a newbie. I'm not doing anything perfect. I make mistakes all the time, you know, but that's a part of that. You need to always be learning and always be evolving. So
yeah, and you have to remember, like, I'm really new in the publishing industry myself, like, way newer than you. I'm a newbie for sure. But there's always somebody behind you, right? There's always someone a step or 10 steps behind you. And what I love, what I have discovered so far, at least in the Christian publishing realm, is that the people ahead of you are so generous with their knowledge, and they are happy to turn around and give you all of this knowledge from their experience. So I don't know. Do you find the same in illustration?
Oh yeah. There's great resources out there all over the place, and one of the best ones, and it lands right into what you're saying, is SCBWI, Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. It's always been that way, and that is why they're there. That's why it exists, is to help, continue to help. And it doesn't just help, you know, the newbies, the people who are brand new that say, you know, I just made this story up telling my kids a bedtime story and they loved it, and now everybody wants me to throw it into a book. It's for those people, but it's also for someone like me that's been in the business for 20 years, and I'm re I'm revamping myself. I'm trying something new. I'm building a new style, a portfolio. You know, there is always, just like there's always somebody behind you, there's always someone ahead of you. You know, mm-hmm. you're never alone. You're never alone in what you're doing. Now, I will say that almost everybody I've ever talked to, their experience on how they got into the business or how, you know, how they started is completely different. And that is one of the most fun things to learn, is that, you know, the people that are out here, even the ones that are on the same plane as you and the same, how do you want to say that, they're in the same place with the same roadblock or the same experience, or, you know, the same, they're at the same place as you. Their experience is so totally different than yours. And sometimes that learning that you can help each other. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is totally like that. I think in most genres, and then on the illustration side, and even from adult, middle grade, or young adult, and children's.
Yeah. That's what I love. And I think that's our whole goal. We got connected. Well, one, we're cousins, but two, working on my book cover, which is something new for you that you were willing to try for me. And I thought you did an outstanding job. But I think that's the whole goal of the podcast, right? It's why we said, let's start a podcast where we can share and help people along the way. So. Yep. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Publishing Cousins. If you enjoyed our creative conversation today, be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcast. We'd also love it if you could rate, review, and share the show. It helps other book lovers find us. You can learn more about Nikki's portfolio and Melissa's novels at publishingcousins.com. And if you have questions about writing, illustrating, or publishing that you'd like us to cover in future episodes, send them our way at literaryscape@literaryscape.com. Until next time, keep creating, and remember, in publishing, as in family, there's always room for more stories.